What's going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome back to the number one sports podcast in the upper Metro Detroit region. I've teamed it up with CNV. I'm Connor, the C of the CNV, as always, joined by my co-host, the V of the V, the V of the CNV. Sorry, Vladdy, what's going on, man?
Not much. Back in Michigan, had an incredible time down in Nashville. Back on the gym grind. I was just telling you before, this is my first time going in 2 weeks, and kind of the college kids are home, and it's annoying because they're all clones of each other with their little stupid haircut. Everyone listening will know it, that little boppy mop thing over the top of their head. Yeah. But there, that's kind of that. Honestly, after the past 2 weekends that have kind of been expensive partying weekends for myself with Indianapolis and Nashville back to back, I am ready to kind of not look at alcohol for an extended period of time and kind of ready for some chill weekends to kind of bring the money back into the green, if you will.
Oh yeah, I know that to an extreme extent, especially after this weekend. Yeah.
I mean, how are you? I forgot to ask.
Oh yeah, I'm good. I was also in Nashville, coincidentally, with Vladdy. I know we talked about that. Great time. I don't know about you, and I get so it's. I mean, obviously, when you have partying weekends, you're not going to feel great afterwards. But just the high, such a high you're on the whole time on those types of trips, that like the come down of just like it's over, you were anticipating that trip for, or a trip like that for a while, is just makes Monday morning even worse than you actually probably feel from some of the extracurriculars sometimes. So I had a little like, I'm sad, I'm just kind of sad that we're not there anymore type thing. Is even opposed to, you know, what some of the actions might have caused me physically. Yeah, but we got a loaded show for you. We're going to have our usual playoff recap with the the NHL and the NBA finals previews for both series. Kind of quickly recap what was over the weekend as far as both of those finishing up. And then the UCL final. Keep thinking about that, how that's just the ligament in my elbow that needs to be like operated on, but it's also a soccer league. We're going to go into that big weekend for Vladdy's squad. Super happy. This podcast, second championship. I think we had one 2 years ago, right when we started. Correct. With Real Madrid.
Correct.
Yeah. So this podcast is second championship. And we're going to get into Troy Weaver and the Detroit Pistons, who aren't going to be winning one anytime soon, to close out the show today.
I love it.
So where do you want to start?
You want to start with the NHL?
Yeah, I can start. So the NHL wraps up the conference finals. We have our Stanley Cup, one of the best cups in all of sports. One of the best things in all of sports for me as a hockey fan, is we have it. We have the Edmonton Oilers against the Florida Panthers. You couldn't pick two regionally far apart teams, I think, in this league in general. I'm not sure what the actual time difference is, but I want to say they're pretty close to the farthest geographically apart in Edmonton and Fort Lauderdale. But to get into kind of, I'll start with the how we got there over the weekend. The last time we talked, the Rangers in the East and with the Florida Panthers was tied at 2, and Florida made quick work of them in those following two games. Thursday night by a score of 3-1, and Saturday night by a score of 3-2. I might have butchered those scores as far as their order, but from the gist of what happened is, I'll get into it when I do my preview, is Florida just kind of wear them down. They played low scoring, good defensive hockey, and they're just this, I say it every week, but it is true. Every time you watch highlights of them, is all their superstars are built for the playoffs. They're all scrappy two-way players. There's none of this like the Toronto guys that don't kind of fade away in the playoffs. All their stars, Matthew Tkachuk, Sasha Bobrovsky, Barkov, Aaron Ekblad, who has stepped up after kind of having a poor regular season, and company, all are big, physical, tough to play against guys. It's why a lot of people think they're going to be the favorite. And it's ultimately kind of how they wore down the Rangers, who weren't necessarily that team. And once Igor Shesterkin stops saving every single puck, it was kind of over for them. Florida was just a much better team. The West, even more exciting, also done in six games, though. I think at the last time we had talked, it might have still been 2-1 Dallas. Needless to say, Edmonton pulls out three wins in a row, a huge surprise for many. I think a lot of people thought Dallas was the front runner, and they just got big performance after big performance. Guys that have been criticized in the past for their lack of play in the playoffs or not being defensive players, like Darnell Nurse, who makes a ton of money. And he was kind of crapped on by the Met media earlier in the playoffs, came alive and had 12 hits in the game clinch or series clinching game six last night. Stuart Skinner, I know we mentioned when we had our guest Nick on last week how of the four teams left, three of them you could argue were the three best goalies in the league, and the odd man out was Edmonton's Stuart Skinner. He delivers 2-1 goal games. Since then, 5-2, 3-1, and then ultimately 2-1 on Sunday night. If he can play like that, Edmonton's gonna have a chance. And obviously, there's nothing to be said more than what Connor McDavid is. I don't know if you saw the goal last night. One of the most beautiful, absolutely in the tightest space, toe drags, one of probably a top five defenseman in the league. And Miro Heiskanen, and goes top shelf from about yay far. I can't use my other hand, but about yay far in space. The guy's just been an absolute gamer. Maybe stats-wise, not his best performance in the playoffs so far. But I think a lot of people in the media have been saying that he is dealing with something injury-wise. But to be an all-time great, and like you talk about good players and great players and what they mean as far as their legacy moving on. Is all the great players, they win a Stanley Cup. They win championships. And that's what McDavid is here to do. It feels like they're kind of on this destiny run. And that'll kind of lead me into the preview of the Cup, is I do think Florida is much better built for the playoffs. They're a better defensive team. They have the better goaltender in Bobrovsky. And like I said, they have three really hard and heavy lines to play against. Well, maybe Edmonton suffers still from a lack of depth, but they've got it done. You've moved guys around in the lineup all series long in the Western Conference Finals. It's worked out for them. You move guys in and out of the lineup like Connor Brown and Corey Perry, and then the next game they're on the second line with Draisaitl. There's been some moving around in that lineup, but Knoblauch, their coach, has made a lot of the right decisions, and they're going to need guys to continue to step up. It's going to be X factors like Stuart Skinner and Nettinghan if he can continue to steal them games. And if their power play can really keep it going like it was, that was the difference in the Western Conference Finals, is Edmonton's power play continued to look at this historic mark. Obviously, when you have Leon and McDavid, they're gonna get their cookies on the power play. But Dallas has really struggled, and if they can keep that going as far as a PK perspective, I think this is gonna go six or seven games. I really do. Edmonton hasn't been there in a long time. They're ready for it. Obviously, there's a lot of history there with Wayne and Coffey and all those great teams that they had in the 70s and 80s. And I don't know if you've seen the clips there, but that barn is rocking. It's the hardest place to play in right now in the playoffs, and it's going to be a hard place for Florida. I know they just played at MSG. I know they played at other spots along this playoff run that were not easy, but the city is ready for it. They got women flashing their boobs at the games and going out and working on the oil rig the next day. They're just ready. They want this, and they deserve this. I'm rooting for them. I picked them at the beginning of these playoffs. I just kind of thought this was McDavid's time. We're in year nine, I believe, maybe year eight or nine of McDavid at 28 years old. Year 13 of Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. This core is going to get it done. I know they're huge underdogs, but I am taking the Edmonton Oilers in seven games, and that is the NHL playoffs.
I'm sorry, did you just say flashing their boobs followed by going to the work on the oil rigs? Where does that come from?
Oh, so there's a clip going viral on Twitter of this woman flashing essentially the crowd last night. And then this podcast I listened to tried to get her on, and she said she couldn't because she works on the oil rig. Like, obviously, that's a big thing out there in Alberta. There's a lot of oil and not a lot of other things to be doing career-wise. So that's where that comes from. Go Oilers, go.
That's absolutely sensational. I am now also rooting for the Edmonton Oilers. I had no dog in this fight, but I'm rooting for those blue collar titties.
And a Canadian team has not won the Stanley Cup since 1993.
Yeah, I guess to be fair, that I kind of rock with like that not continue or that continuing, but
I
like
agree. I
screw Canada.
agree.
But for that story, for McDavid, for the legacies, let them have one. We'll claim them. We'll claim Edmonton is an American town after that, and they can continue their drought. But
Yeah, I'll say if somebody's going to do it, I'm happy it's not Montreal, Toronto, or Vancouver.
yeah, that's fair. If you're done with the NHL, is that so I can move on to the NBA next?
Yeah, let's move on to the NBA.
So when we last spoke, the Celtics were already in the finals. We did talk about the Mavs and the Timberwolves. I had it done in six. Our special emphasis on special friend Feeks thought it would be a comeback Wolves in seven. I guess we were both wrong in that instance. The Mavs showed up in game five and just buried the Timberwolves. It felt like that Mavs Suns series a few years back where Luka outscores the Suns by himself in the first half and they're up by 50. It was an absolute burial. Luka showed why he was the best player in the series. I'm pretty sure he outscored the Wolves by himself in that first quarter. And yeah, sends the Mavs on to the finals. Before I actually talk about that, I want to go back to the Kyrie Irving trade in 2023 because we did talk about it. I was actually kind of listening back and I understood some of those pessimistic points you were making, but I was here telling you that it could work out. And a year later and some time later, it did work out. And it's actually weird because you made valid points then and they kind of came to fruition in the 23 season where the Mavs were in the playoffs. They made the trade and they end up out of the playoffs. But I was looking back at kind of some of what went on, and there was absolutely some fuckery that was going on. Because I don't know if you remember, the Mavs ended up getting investigated for tanking, and then ended up getting fined $750,000 as an organization. So the reasoning for that was, at the time, the Dallas Mavericks owed the New York Knicks, I believe it was, a first round pick, and it was only protected within the top 10. The Mavs ended up with their tanking and falling out of the playoffs and kind of into the lottery. They ended up getting up to 10 and keeping that pick for themselves. And that pick is important because in the draft following the season in 2023, they traded down from pick 10 to pick 12. And then with pick 12, they picked somebody by the name of Derek Lively, who is currently one of their key interior players alongside Daniel Gafford. So it is very interesting to kind of look back at the trade itself and kind of some of the, I don't think financial is the right words, but some of the sporting implications of what could have happened had they made the playoffs, what did happen, what didn't happen, and kind of where they are now. So I didn't know if you had kind of looked into that or if that even crossed your mind, but when I was kind of just researching the Mavs, I saw that. I went down a little quick rabbit hole of the history of what was going on, and it was pretty interesting.
Yeah, does that just like add, I mean, it's almost like good luck for the NBA at this point that they've ended up finding them, that this team that didn't make the playoffs has now just turned around and made the finals. I know
Yeah, I
it's
mean,
they've made some additions to the roster. You mentioned Lively, but still, this is I'd argue it's almost more affirmation that something fishy was going on.
oh, there, yeah, again, I was looking back at it. They were sitting players that probably should not have been sitting. And obviously, they couldn't go out and prove that, oh, the organization told them to intentionally lose games, because that's when you really start kind of flirting with kind of sports fixing and where you get into the gray areas of lifetime bans. But they did prove like, hey, like maybe this guy wasn't hurt enough to not be playing. So we're set up for Celtics-Mavs finals. I guess I might start the breakdown by echoing myself from the Mavs-Timberwolves. From a 1 through 8, 1 through 9 roster construction standpoint, the Celtics are a better team, but Luka Doncic is the best player in the series. And not only that, I think that both Luka and Kyrie are better closers than what the Celtics have in Tatum or Brown or Derrick White, if you want to say that. So the longer these games stay tight and the longer that each possession matters more than the previous one because it is that kind of close game, the more and more I like the Mavs odds just because I trust Luka and Kyrie more than I trust serial chokers, Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. I talked about it last week how Kyrie, or maybe 2 weeks ago, how Kyrie has helped Luka take some possessions off on the offensive end. And that's true. And from a game plan perspective, there's nothing the Celtics can do about that. If the ball's in Kyrie's hand, they can't control Luka's movements. But what the Celtics do have control over and what the Timberwolves did not nearly do enough of is controlling how active Luka Doncic and how many possessions he can take off on the defensive end. Watching that Western Conference Finals, there were minutes on end where Luka Doncic would go sit in the corner on Mike Conley or Jaden McDaniels, and he wouldn't move on a defensive possession. And he would just get rest, get rest, get rest. And that is something the Celtics cannot allow to do. They need to sit there. They need to get him actively defending someone and start kind of expending that energy that we always like to say comes at a premium with Luka Doncic. You got to start wasting that on defensive end too. I don't know. In terms of a kind of health perspective, you mentioned this and you kind of ranted a little how the NBA playoffs or how the NBA finals is always going to be starting on June 6th, I think it was, right? And
Yes.
how no matter how many games it went or what was going on, these teams were going to sit here and sit. And now that's kind of what we're looking at. The Mavs have been sitting or will be sitting for a week. The Celtics have already been sitting for a week. They'll be sitting for two. And I think that kind of maybe takes a little bit of the rest versus rust debate that we often talk about in football away, just because both of these teams are kind of getting there. I just think that this is kind of
Yes.
beneficial for all. The Celtics get back, or they should get back, Kristaps Porzingis. The Mavericks get a healthy Derek Lively back. I mean, they mentioned a little bit of how Luka looked like he might be nursing an injury. Obviously, nothing that impeded him from playing or from kind of being that X factor in the Western Conference Finals. They did mention maybe something was nagging, so he can get some rest. So I would expect these teams to come out about as fully healthy as possible. This will be the best team that the Celtics have faced. These will be the best players the Celtics have faced. I know we talked about how the Pacers benefited from some teams who didn't have players, but Celtics did too. Donovan Mitchell missed time. Tyrese Halliburton missed time. We've talked about the Jimmy Butler not being there. We've talked about the Joel Embiid-less 76ers not making it out of a playoff series. So we'll see what happens. I'm a fan, and I think kind of in a perspective to what you said with Edmonton, not exactly for the same storylines. Give me the Mavs in six. I don't really think home court matters. I think I mentioned this to you and a couple others when we were talking. I don't think home court matters really in basketball as much anymore, just because these guys are so skilled in the games. Even though they do play defense now, there is still so much finesse, and there's just things that no matter how good of defense you play, there's nothing you can do about it. So I'm not going to sit here and pretend, oh, they steal one on the road and like they get it back. I think the Mavs win in six. That's my prediction. I mean, you look at the Western Conference Finals. Four of the five games were won by the road team. What are you supposed to do about that? So that's kind of my NBA Finals prediction. I know when we come back next week, I think the first two games will be done. So we'll see what happens and how it goes.
Going back to my take originally, I guess in a year ago or over a year ago now, I didn't account for Kyrie Irving at 31, 32 years old he is now to kind of play this role that he has in this playoffs. I don't know if it's like he knows to be quiet about some of the controversial stuff he said in the past, or if he's just genuinely making an effort himself to do so. But he has, and it's really, he's been a veteran leader, which is something that I think many people never thought he could do, or didn't think he could do, or didn't think it'd be easy to do. And he's done that, and so he deserves props as well. I'm going to take the Celtics in six. I think this is their time. They've kind of, I know, been there in the past. They're going to have way more finals experience. I think the only player on the Mavs who's been to a finals is Kyrie Irving in 2016. This Celtics team has been together for a few years, and I just think it's their time. This is their year as far as the NBA goes.
Yeah, I love that Kyrie point. You're absolutely correct. It is a little bit more of an adult, whether you said whether it's willing or whether it's just, you know what, for sporting legacy necessity standpoints, I need to shut the fuck up and be the secondary player to Luka Doncic. But he has absolutely grown up, and he's not the kid that ran away from LeBron. He's not the kid that was causing problems in Boston. So, incredible point.
Yeah, and who knows, he'll be hungry to beat his former team where, really kind of started to go south for him.
I actually kind of want to stay with basketball just because we have the Troy Weaver stuff. The city of Detroit is rejoicing. I didn't even realize this. This is actually a 3 or 4 day old news. I read about it last night. I wasn't even sure it was like official because I didn't see anyone like massively reporting it. There was no Woj bomb. It was just like some quiet news reporters. And I'll get into part of why that was weird to me. But Troy Weaver has been let go. It done an incredibly weird way because at the end of the season, they kind of announced, hey, we're going to get a new president of basketball operations who would kind of be brought in as a second voice for decision making, which that's weird. You don't, most functioning organizations don't have two guys doing that. Then they hired the dude from the Pelicans. I don't know how you say his first name. Is it Tryon or Trajan Langdon? And then they just quietly on a Friday afternoon dump the, oh my God, Troy Weaver has been let go. Goodbye. And again, no one knew about this. I was texting friends, I was texting people, and it's like, is this really true? And they're like, I didn't see anything about it. And that to me was crazy. The record with Troy Weaver, 74 and 244
Oof.
overall, which equates to 0.233. That is a probably league average in the MLB batting average these days, and we know those guys don't hit for shit.
Yeah.
They're also a team that pretty much started out as the worst team in the league in his first year and got worse wins wise every single consecutive year. Basically, I mean, the year one was a shortened COVID year where they played 72 games instead of 82. So they did win two less games than they won in year one. But by percentage standpoints, I'm going to give them the credit and say they were the same team. They got worse every single year, which should not be possible if you already started as the worst team. That's not possible. His demeanor was absolutely incredible as well, because the only time in 4 or 5 or 4 years that I saw any passion from Troy Weaver was when he was on video threatening to beat my former classmate's ass. That is the only time he ever raised his voice or showed any form of intensity or interest in doing something. Everything else was just stuttering through press conferences going, and then throwing out some buzzwords about work ethic or improvement, and then never actually doing anything about it. I guess I'll let you get some thoughts in, and then I want to share with you some of his absolute general managerial masterclass highlights of his 4 year tenure here.
Yeah, it's just I don't really have a ton of thoughts because it's like something that was inevitable at this point, and it just never really worked out. I think it's you're a byproduct of like who hires you, and I really don't like is anything going to change from here? Like Gores is still the owner. Gores is still not really willing to make this a true investment of a winning franchise, and I think that's part when you have that mentality at the top, you get guys that make decisions throughout the organization that are just not cut out for the job, and that's exactly what Troy Weaver was in his short tenure in Detroit.
Yeah, I mean, I think honestly the best way of putting it is, and I'm going to use you as an example, was he was so bad at his job that he drove the large majority of the average sports fan to apathy. Like, I'm a basketball fan, so I did still give the Pistons some of my time investment, no matter how bad they were, because I wanted to see what was going on with these young core players. But for the people like you who love sports but are not going to waste their time on teams that are not worth wasting their time on, that's what you got for 4 years. And I think that might be the perfect way of it kind of encapsulating his time.
Let's go through some of the highlights.
Oh, you're going to love it. Let's start with 2020, where we drafted Killian Hayes over Tyrese Halliburton, and then followed that up by drafting Sadiq Bey and Isaiah Stewart over Tyrese Maxey. And then Sadiq Bey, who was probably the only like semi-good player of that bunch in kind of the terms of like what the NBA likes out of its players with them being able to shoot. He then proceeded to trade away for James Wiseman in the form of just kind of 5 second round picks going back and forth two ways. Some of the other highlights include having a fetish for former big men top five draft pick busts, such as James Wiseman, Marvin Bagley, Jahlil Okafor, Josh Jackson. I know he's not a big, but we're going to count this into the, we're going to throw him in there. Some of the other highlights include paying money and giving contracts out to bums that no other team would have given money and contracts out to, and then having to trade that contract away in the form of losing draft capital, such as signing Mason Plumlee to a 3-year, $24 million contract in 2020, and then a year later, or actually less than a year later, at the draft in 2021, he trades away Mason Plumlee in the 37th overall pick for the 57th overall pick. And again, that's kind of the classic NBA salary dump of, oh, fuck, I made a mistake. Please, let me help you out in the draft pick category, and you take this non-expiring contract away from me. Or paying Marvin Bagley a 3-year, $36 million contract, and then turning around and needing to trade away second round picks so that you can get his stupid contract off your books. Or we can go to some other highlights, such as actually just tripping into a semi-decent move and then botching it further, like acquiring Bojan Bogdanovic only to then turn around and have a team that's not competing, not doing anything, and declining a reported offer of multiple first round picks. Before finally trading away for a bag of peanuts in 24. Or drafting Jalen Duren, and he had to give up a first round pick to do this, and we'll talk about that here in a second, before bringing in aforementioned James Wiseman, who is statistically the worst player in the NBA, to take away some of his minutes for development. And that first round pick that I talk about, the Pistons actually still owe to the Knicks, and it keeps getting deferred. So basically, how it went was that pick was conveyed, and it was basically a first round protected pick for 23. It was like, here, if the Pistons are in the top 18, it defers by a year. This past year, it was if the Pistons are in the lottery, defers by a year. Next year, in 2025, if it ends up, if we once again end up in the lottery, we get to keep it, and it defers by a year. And if 2026, where the protections are 1 through 11, if we still end up there, which we probably will because this team's nowhere close, it defers another year to 2027, where the protections are pick 1 through 9. And then I swear to God, if we haven't gotten out of pick 9 by 2027, you got to fire this Langdon guy because he fucking sucks at his job too. But currently, right now, the Detroit Pistons are down a first round pick at some point because this fucking bum wanted to draft a guy and then not actually let this guy play.
That is one of the craziest, and I know the NBA is king of those types of deals, but that is one of the craziest, like, protected things I've ever heard. How creatively incompetent is that?
I don't know. Again, it's part of me wishes the NBA could be a little bit more straightforward, like the NFL. Here's your pick. Give me my player,
Right.
and we move on. But you're right. Who said I'm gonna give you a first round pick, but for 3 years it's lottery protected. For 1 year, it's almost certainly lottery protected. And for the last year, the protections, it's top 10 protected. Who does that? How much acid do you have to do to come up with that kind of idea?
I love the point you also make going back to even before the stats. Now I'm really thinking about it. It is funny. The only video with any emotion was that one of him yelling at a fan in this past year. It's like that just is like the ultimate summary of his tenure.
Not
And
just
you don't
yelling.
know.
He was threatening him. He's like, I'm gonna beat your ass. It's like, come on, man. You can't yell at a 24-year-old kid like that.
And now so you want to be fired.
I mean, he didn't get fired for that, I'll tell you. Like, Tom
No,
Bose even knew it happened.
probably not.
But yeah, so Troy Weaver, the worst general manager in American sports history, is officially gone. Go team. He is the guy who turned the Detroit Pistons into an even further apathetic state. And I actually made this point this weekend to a friend where it's like, you can get mad at a team, but the second you stop caring, or the second that you make like anger is still better than apathy because anger implies attention and care. Apathy, when no people know, that's when you've completely lost the plot, and that's where Troy Weaver brought the Detroit Pistons to. So there's that on basketball.
Yeah. I don't think I have anything else to add on that one, but I agree.
Yeah, on to soccer, as you mentioned, massive week and kind of massive last 48 hours for my team here, winning our 15th UCL final and then following that up by officially announcing that Kylian Mbappe is a Real Madrid player after 11 years. They finally did it. Good for them. But we'll start with the UCL final, and then we'll get to Mbappe kind of following the order of operations in real life. I think I told this to friends. I mean, I didn't do a good enough job of kind of talking about soccer on this pod, especially as we kind of ran out of football topics to talk about. So for future years, I'll get better at this. But talking about this with friends, on paper, I always said we're a better team than Dortmund. And the first half showed exactly why games don't get played on paper. I don't know how much you were able to watch or how closely you were able to watch, given you were kind of out and about with friends and you kind of having more of a social time. But we had a majority of the possession in the first half, but none of that mattered because we didn't do anything with it. Our main distributor, Toni Kroos, was sitting way too far deep, and a lot of his passes were majority sideways. And even the ones that were progressive, quote unquote, they didn't beat any lines of defense. I mean, for the ones listening who kind of watch and understand, he's kind of patented one of his favorite passes is like basically some 60, 70-yard ball across the field, kind of into space for someone to run onto that beats a couple of lines of defense just because that the other team has shifted so far defensively. He was sitting so far back that even though he could play that pass, it landed at his guy's feet, and his guy looks up and he's staring at two defenders. It was a, hey man, this is cool, but we didn't do anything with it. And some of the other players were absolute ghosts. Rodrigo was so bad. I was yelling at him to get pulled. I mean, I was watching the game with Feegs. He learned a new player. I'm sure he'll remember Rodrigo just because I was yelling at him so much to get him off the field. He was that bad in the first half. There was Jude Bellingham, ghost. The only player we had who tried something was Vinny Jr., and he failed more often than he succeeded. There was really only one time or two times he kind of got away from his marker and was able to slightly create something of the appearance of a chance, but there was never any concrete, maybe proof with it. Meanwhile, Dortmund, on the other side, were active, aggressive, coordinated, compact, willing, and so on. Basically, everything that you can think of that justifies why you actually have to play the games and why there's always a chance for the quote unquote underdog. They were able to create some incredibly clear chances, although some were offside and some were not, but they just couldn't finish any of them. They had a player, Adeyemi, who's blistering pace, and he got through a couple of times. Most notably, he went 1v keeper, and our keeper was able to kind of push him wide enough where, yes, the guy got around him, but it forced him so far wide that our defenders were able to get back in time and actually block the empty net shot. So there was that. There was a couple other ones where just their guys were able to kind of make some lazy run through that wasn't tracked by our center backs, and we kind of got saved by them missing in some offside flags that came up. But the most telling moment of the first half, and I guess there's kind of two of them, one leads into the other, was our first corner of the game. We play it into the box. It kind of bounces around a little bit, and it falls into Dortmund players' feet. I counted seven of their players put their head down and just took off sprinting on a counterattack. And within 4 seconds, it was 7-on-4 Borussia Dortmund towards our players. And within, like, you could kind of see the rest of our guys, like, they were sprinting back because they realized, oh, fuck, these guys are sprinting. We got to go. And thankfully, Dortmund was not able to kind of do anything off that. But that, to me, was just basically your perfect kind of encapsulation of that first half. One team was mentally just whatever, and the other one showed up trying to get a goal early and then trying to hold on and win the game. It didn't work out for Dortmund. We know how the second half went, but it was just the first half was so bad. I mean, I didn't sit down. I was sitting there biting my fingernails. I was stressed out. All the fans on the Twitter pages were pissed off. We were playing poorly. It was not great. And I guess the other thing that kind of encapsulates the first half was the they kind of do their little tracking stats of how far players and teams run. The Dortmund team had run 4 kilometers more than the Real Madrid team, which that's a lot. Like, yes, there's 11 guys, but that's an average of almost half a kilometer per player. And when you think about it, it should relatively be even, because if I'm the attacker and I make a run, you run with me. We both ran the same distance. You should not get outran that much. And that was the statistic that went along with kind of that video that, like, I kind of replayed through my head of, these guys are here to play. The other guys are just here to kind of dink it around a little bit. Let's have some fun and whatever. But we got into half. We kind of did the classic Real Madrid thing where, for some reason, we just don't play first halves. I don't know if we use it as a feeling out process. But second half, we kind of changed up the structure of our defense and we became a lot more kind of, I don't know if consolidated is the right word, but a lot more secure. It did every if for, again, first half, every time they took off, every time they touched the ball, you thought they might score. The second half, they still had a couple chances, but it wasn't like that. It was a little bit more of, hey, Real Madrid is in control of this game. We kind of got a little bit more urgency and a little bit more directness with how we play. Jude Bellingham, Rodrigo started to get on the ball a little bit more. Cruz was able to get a little bit further up the field, and in his kind of diagonal passes, were able to actually bypass lines of defense. Vinny Jr. became more and more effective. We grew into the game that kind of turned into a matter of when. We also did get lucky. Dortmund, I think their coach made some subs that were not correct. Most notably was the very first sub of the game, where I mentioned the Adeyemi character in the first half. He was absolutely their most dangerous player. He had the pace and he got taken off for Marco Reus. And while some instances that could be looked at as a good move, it was awful in the game because it allowed our right back, Danny Carvajal, to start moving further up the field and playing with a lot more freedom without having to be worried about the pace of Adeyemi behind him. And that kind of opened us up. We started creating chance after chance, and there was always this one slight deflection or one little save from the goalie that kind of kept us from scoring in the first part of that second half. And then in the set, and then we finally got the goal. Danny Carvajal, which is funny because the right back I just mentioned, he is probably, I think they said, the shortest player on the field, and he won the header to score the goal, which should never really happen. And that was the second time he had won a header with the exact same type of pass. And from there, I think Dortmund had to become a little bit more reactive because, there's no second leg, there's no further season. You have 10 more minutes to save your life. So they took off some of their center mids for forwards. They lost some balance. And then they had a tragically awful pass from their left back that went right to our player. Jude plays it to Vinny. Vinny has a kind of a scuffed shot, but it ends up going in, makes it 2-0 Real Madrid. At that point, it was kind of over. There was one last scare, well, with I think with 5 minutes of regular time to go, where they actually score a goal, but as with the previous chances, offsides, comes back, and then we were kind of just able to kill off the game with that little 15th, with that just little substitute here, substitute there, rinky dink, slow down, and kill the game 2-0. I don't know. I mean, were you able to watch any of it? Is there something maybe you want to ask about, or?
Watched like the first half hour. And I mean, I can kind of tell at that point that Dortmund was probably outplaying Real Madrid based on my limited knowledge in soccer. I guess, is there something specific at halftime that you saw that you think kind of led this game to kind of change on its heels from one half to another?
So I think the first thing was our kind of our right center mid, who also kind of doubles as a right winger just based on the way the rest of the formation plays, Fede Valverde. We brought him a little bit more central to kind of help with that defensive stability of they're not just going to run past us. And with that, I think that kind of allowed us to get a little bit more of a, not even necessarily a hold, because like I said, we had possession in the first half. We just didn't do anything with it. It wasn't about the possession. It was more about where we were possessing the ball. And we were able to move as a team further up the field. And then when Adeyemi was taking off with his runs, he wasn't taking off at half. he was taking off at their goalie box, and we had time to get back and kind of prevent anything from happening. So I think that was one of the big things. And I guess the other one was just players started to play. I mean, like I said, we were the better team. Jude Bellingham starts getting the ball at his feet and being able to kind of move it around. Rodrigo starts being able to go at their right back, kind of give them some or their left back, give them some stuff to think about. And just kind of the, I'd say the experience and the talent took over. Got Goodwin 15th. That's 2 UCL titles in 3 years and set up for a lot more, hopefully. But from there, I guess the second part of kind of the last 48 hours of Real Madrid fandom and around Twitter is Kylian Mbappe. The saga is officially over. After 11 years of trying to sign him, he will be a Real Madrid player. I always remember saying that the amount of BS and amount of kind of smoke and mirrors that went along with this transfer saga, that I wouldn't believe anything until I saw that little Comunicado Oficial tweet from Real Madrid themselves. That happened as of 1:30 this afternoon, and it closes the worst transfer saga in the history of the sport. Just absolute bullshittery political influences. He said this, she said that, he can't do this, you go screw yourself, that just it was never meant to be this bad, but things happened, people got involved. And I remember, like, and you mentioned kind of how we talked about this 2 years ago with the podcast, and I think it was one of the first couple episodes we had right after the UCL final, where I was furious with him because, like, at the time, all it was really known was Kylian Mbappe has renewed with PSG. And it's like, well, why would he do that if this was supposed, if Real Madrid was supposedly his boyhood club and this and that? And as time went on and as more and more information leaked and came out and kind of came to the newspapers and the people in the know, I am absolutely convinced and I'm of the mindset that he was not allowed to leave PSG in 2022, whether he wanted to or not. There were political factors, and there might have been some form of bullshittery going on because none of it makes sense. And we'll get into it and we'll kind of talk about it. So I guess technically I say 11 years because the saga technically starts when he was 13 and he played a game for our youth academy and we were trying to sign him then. But it's a 13-year-old kid. There was never really drama with that. It's just an interesting fun fact. The saga actually started in 2017. He had his breakout year at Monaco. And it was always kind of known. There was always the pictures of him as a kid with all the Ronaldo posters and the Zinedine Zidane stuff and the Real Madrid logos. It had always been viewed as his boyhood club, his dream club. And there came the opportunity to sign him. He turned it down at the time. And I think he did it under the guise of, I am not ready for this in my career. He was 17. And before I said it, in hindsight, we'll never know if that's a right or wrong thing. But I understand the logic of what happened. He was 17 at the time. He would have been signing for, at the time, back-to-back UCL winners, going from being a 17-year-old kid to playing for the most prestigious, the most demanding team in the world. So I understand why maybe he thought, this is not right for me. I'll go somewhere else. I'll use a stepping stone, and then I'll come over. I think that's completely understandable. And then that summer, he signs with PSG, and the saga kind of died down for a few seasons. There wasn't really anything that was going to happen right after he signed for PSG in the second year either. There was a little bit of kind of hiccup here, rumor there during the 2020 COVID year about Real Madrid's future and how Mbappe would be a part of that. There was nothing kind of drama-wise. There was no smokes or flares yet. First, so I'll kind of run through this. The first real sparks came in the late summer of 2021. So to explain to you and then whoever's listening, it might not understand. In soccer, you basically have two periods of time when you can complete transfers. One is in the summer transfer window, which is basically the months of June and July. Or no, July and August. I'm sorry. So from July 1st to August 31st, you can complete transfers. And the second one is from January 1st to January 31st. So late summer of 2021, I don't remember the exact dates. Let's say last 10 days of August. So Real Madrid reportedly offered 200 million euros to PSG for Mbappe, who was going into the last 12 months of his contract and could have joined for free starting in January of that season. So how that works is, in soccer, if you are over 23 years old, and you have less than 6 months left in your contract, you are able to sign a pre-contract with your next team to join in that following summer. So us offering 200 million euros to them 5 months before we could have kind of done that pre-contract thing for free was kind of insane at the time. PSG didn't even respond to the offer. They just kind of they didn't respond to the official offer. They just had their little president, Nasser Al-Khelaifi, come out and he started screaming things like, "It's impossible for Mbappe to leave. He'll never be allowed to go. He will never leave us." And then January came around, so this is January of 2022, and everyone had kind of assumed that it was done, that Real Madrid had signed Mbappe on that kind of pre-contract and that he was leaving PSG for free. We had presented the contract to him on January 1st, and it was assumed that everything was agreed upon, but it could not be formally announced because, as timing would have it, we were scheduled to play PSG in the round of 16 in February. And you don't want to run the kind of the, "Hey, a month before we're supposed to play these guys, we are going to announce that we're taking their best player who will also be playing against us." Because you start messing with things like that, they just let it go. So they everyone kind of assumed it was agreed upon, it was done. Then you flash forward a couple of months to May of 22, let's say about 10, 12 days before the UCL final in 2022. And it comes out that Mbappe had never actually signed the agreed upon contract. He'd only agreed to it. But an agreement verbally is not a legally binding contract, as I'm sure you have learned in your time in law school. You need some signatures, right?
Depends if the statute of frauds applies, but you can have an oral agreement that's legally enforceable, yes.
So it sounds like maybe we didn't have the best lawyers on the case. If we had you out there, maybe we had them in
I
some
also don't
suit.
know what like Spanish law
Yeah,
is,
no,
like
I
the
know. More of a joke. But basically, it was assumed that it was agreed upon, but it had never been signed. And it comes out that the kind of the Emir of Qatar, who's basically the leader of that country, because Qatar owns PSG.
right.
So technically the owner of PSG, but not necessarily in the direct sense. He begins kind of talking with Mbappe and his family. You've got the Prime Minister of France, Emmanuel Macron. He starts talking to Mbappe and his family. And 10 days before it comes out, oh, Kylian Mbappe has changed his mind. He is re-signing with PSG. And it was supposedly a new 3-year contract that would take him to 2025. You flash forward to the summer of 2023, and it actually comes out that this 3-year contract was actually a 2-year contract plus a 1-year player option for that 24-25 season. And then it further comes out that just 3 weeks after Mbappe had signed 3-year contract in 2022, he had sent them a letter saying, "I will not be taking my player option. This is a 2-year contract." So from there, later on in that summer, PSG tried, right, later on this past summer in 2023, PSG tried to effectively erase Mbappe from kind of the club. He stopped appearing in the club's websites. He stopped appearing on season ticket packages. I think for a brief moment, you couldn't even buy his jersey on their shop. They started threatening him by saying, "Oh, if you don't re-sign, we're gonna force you to train with the youth teams, and you're not gonna be allowed to play," which I don't know French labor law, but that doesn't sound legal. You flash forward to January of 2024, and once again, Real Madrid have offered a contract, this time on terms much lower than what were previously agreed upon, as we were not as in a vulnerable state as we were in 21 and then the winter of 22. And once again, it was kind of a he said, she said, this is formally agreed and potentially even signed, but we cannot announce it because there's a possibility that PSG and Real Madrid meet in the Champions League. And the idea was that as long as that possibility kind of existed, they would not do anything because they did not want to kind of impact the Real Madrid team going forward. PSG end up making it to the semis. So once they effectively get knocked out, it turns out, well, now we can't announce it now because we've got a final to prepare for ourselves. And so it kind of kept getting drawn out and pushed forward and pushed forward. And you actually flash forward again to a couple weeks ago, where there is currently a legal war between Mbappe and PSG, because PSG have apparently not paid him his wages for March and April of 2024, and have also apparently refused to pay for his loyalty bonuses, which were agreed to in the 2022 extension. Again, I'm not a French labor law expert, but that doesn't sound legal, and it doesn't sound normal, and all of this just screams bullshit. And it's just, as more and more came out, as more and more happened, I think just so much of it comes down to the fact that PSG and Qatar specifically, they were hosting the World Cup in 2022. They did not want to get embarrassed by having their best player, their crown jewel, and their kind of entity, if you will, leaving them on a free in an embarrassing kind of exit. So I would assume, if I had to guess, that metaphorically speaking, I hopefully not literally, he walked into a room, they put a gun to his head, and they say, "We don't care how many zeros you put on this contract, you are not leaving us now. You can leave us later, you cannot do it now before we host a World Cup."
He's Italian, correct?
He's French.
He's French, okay.
Yeah, and that's kind of where the French influences came from. That's kind of where the Macron coming in and talking and saying, "Hey, you're a Parisian, you're a local, you can't leave your country like this." And they still did that to him, to be fair, because this past summer, it was once again, there were rumors that Macron was in contact with him. "Hey, we've got an Olympics and we've got a Euros in 24, and you can't leave PSG and do that." And again, none of that we'll ever know. And he came out a couple days ago, and he was talking about his kind of renewal, and he said there was more to it than just this, and he kind of alluded to the World Cup being a factor. Obviously, he didn't come out and say, "Yeah, I was forced to do that," because I'm sure you really open Pandora's box if you say that. But as more stuff came out, as more of it happened, I refuse to ever believe that he wanted to re-sign. Because look, if you want to re-sign with a team, you don't sign only a 3-year contract. And you don't actually make that 3-year contract a 2+1. And you don't make it known that you're not going to be taking your plus one 3 weeks after you said you were going to do a 2+1. None of that happens if you wanted to stay there. If you wanted to stay there, you sign a 4, 5, 6 year extension, and you lock it away, you throw it aside, and you say, "We'll deal with this again in 4 years when you start having your contract run down." So I look back at it, and maybe someday some of this stuff does come out, but I think it was the player who got caught up in political crosshairs.
Yeah, the World Cup thing makes sense in adding the political, I guess, notion to it. I just like don't understand really. I know he is kind of this once maybe once in a generation is a bit of an over exaggeration, but
It's not.
a generational talent. That what a bad precedent for PSG moving forward with any superstar that they come into contact with or want to sign in the future. I just like I understand the emotional ties to it, the political ties to it, but yeah, like I just can't understand once you've let it dragged out this long, and once the World Cup thing is over, that we're still so or still willing to set such a bad precedent with this type of talent.
Yeah, and again, this is me speculating, so don't, there's probably four people in the world that really know what happened. But
Yeah,
you're pro
I
but you're pro
also. Go ahead.
I was gonna say you're but you're probably right. There's definitely some probably image here where people are looking saying, "Well, he claimed he had a dream, and his dream got delayed by 2, potentially 3 years, depending on where you look at him being feasibly able to move." That's not something, like you said, that's not something you want to get stuck. That is something that people will sit down with their families and their agents and say, "You know what? If I've got aims for something bigger, maybe this is not the place for me," because they're just vindictive people who say, "Well, we need you this, then this, and this." But that is a good point. And sorry, I cut you off.
No, I was just going to add that it's so interesting because I think this can really only happen in a sport like soccer, where you have leagues that are different countries competing for the same talent like this, where you don't necessarily have in the major American sports. And that this is now these notions of politics and all these social factors in general from country to country become a factor. And it's just not, it's so uncommon. It's so. I guess like new to me, and it's such a new situation in general because This would never happen in an American sport where I don't think, because of there's no international, I guess, relationship between these, like these teams, let alone these leagues, that this would just not happen in America.
Yeah, I get, and again, it really was a perfect kind of shit situation. Again, if PSG is owned by Saudi Arabia instead of Qatar, maybe it doesn't happen. Maybe they're like, you know what? We're not about to host a World Cup. We can let him go. We'll take that $200 million offer, and we'll re-put that money into it, putting a team together as opposed to a collection of individuals, which PSG has always been known to kind of incorrectly assemble a squad in that notion. But it was just, I think it was the perfect kind of shit combination of French player, French club, owned by the Qataris. Qataris host a World Cup. Like that, you cannot plan that out any forward. So
Right.
there's that. I guess the last thing that I'd kind of written down was just kind of going back. Is like, you can't go back and say, oh, well, how would results have played out if he joined in this year or that year or this and that? But I think you can go back and maybe look at what a potential him joining would have meant for player development and player recruitment. Right off the bat, had PSG accepted that 2021 offer, he comes in and he moves Vinny Jr. away from that left wing spot. And maybe Vinny Jr. never becomes the best player in the world and the current, probably, or odds on favorite to win the Ballon d'Or for 2024. Because at the time, Vinny was in a very bad spot with a lot of Real Madrid fans, myself included. He had spent his first 3 years here. I think he had 8 goals to show for over 3 years. And it never come together. He had always been super dangerous, but he got in front of the goal and he couldn't score in a whorehouse. So had Mbappe joined, he would have taken that left wing spot, and Vinny maybe's not playing here. Maybe doesn't reach the heights he does. It obviously all started clicking for him, and he's been one of the best players in the world for the last 3 years. After
So
that,
what
you
happens now, though? Like, if they still play the same position?
I can get to that, but after that, you get to Eduardo Camavinga. So in 2021, when PSG ignored our offer, I assume our president, Florentino Perez, got mad and went and bought a player for no reason other than to spite PSG. That player was Eduardo Camavinga, who has since established himself as one of the most versatile players in the world. And he's still incredibly young. He's only 21 years old. We bought him when he was 18. He was an integral super sub in the team that won in 2022. Last year, he had to kind of makeshift play left back because we only had one left back and he got hurt. And then this year, he kind of reestablished himself as a starting center midfielder for us. That probably never happens had PSG accepted our offer. Then the following season, you look at kind of the case of Aurelien Tchouaméni, who we signed in 2022 in the summer of, but maybe we wouldn't have had the money for had we paid that much money to PSG or had we spent as much money as we would have spent in the Mbappe contract in the pre-contract had he arrived before that. And while I don't think he's necessarily had like kind of the established legacy, if you will, of Camavinga, just because he missed the end of this past season with a foot injury and kind of didn't get to play in the decisive games. But this past season, we only lost 2 games over the entirety of the season in all competitions. And those were games that he wasn't in. So every game that Tchouaméni started for us, we did not lose. And he is going to continue. I think he's only 23, 24 years old. He's going to be there for another 4 or 5 years. Then there's Jude Bellingham, who we signed last summer for money that may or may not be there had we signed Mbappe earlier. So it's really interesting to kind of see just basically 3 years of center mid signings that have completely changed how Real Madrid operate and kind of completely allowed us to move forward from the Kroos, Modric, Casemiro midfield into a midfield of the future that I don't know how many of genuinely would have been signed had we gotten Mbappe earlier. I guess to your question of what's going to happen now, the formation that Real Madrid played this season was a unique one where both of our strikers, if you will, were Vinny Jr. and Rodrigo, who neither of them are strikers, and they kind of just interchanged of who would be on the left because that was both of their preferred positions. And so I assume in terms of how does Mbappe arriving moving forward change any of this? It's one of two things. Either Mbappe shows up, the formation stays the same, which I think might be best case because it allows Jude to stay in his best position, but Rodrigo just gets dropped. He was a starter this year, but he did not do enough to say, hey, I need to be a starter after this next player who's better than me shows up. And at that point, it would kind of be something similar where both players like playing on the left, both players are good enough to interchange and kind of move centrally and kind of just be fluid, and that's what they'll do. The other factor is maybe they go back. Real Madrid has typically always been known to play a 4-3-3. Maybe they go back to that formation, and the 4-3-3 is some combination of Rodrigo on the right, Mbappe in the middle, and Vinny Jr. on the left, and maybe Mbappe and Vinny continue to do that little, hey, you be out left for a bit, and then we'll interchange, and then we'll interchange. But it is a valid question of what, because you're right, they do all play the same preferred position. It's funny because in their own right, each of those guys could probably be a top 3 to 4 left winger in the world. I'm your friends. Rodrigo or Vinicius and Mbappe are the two best left wingers in the world when they want to play. That is unquestionable. And Rodrigo, if he ever played there consistently, would probably be a top 4 or 5 1. And it's funny that we've got all three. They all want to play the same position, but they can't because you only get one left winger. So
Yep.
that's kind of the Mbappe saga. I know that I've been ranting now for kind of a long time. I guess, is there any other questions or anything I might have said that doesn't make sense that I kind of re-go over for you and then maybe for others who don't have the in-depth soccer knowledge of some of those who might be listening or?
Yeah, I got one more. I think one more thing, and it's kind of reiterating what we just talked about is how worried are you to there aren't too many instances like this where you do add the best player in the world to a team that's already on top. I guess how worried are you? You talked about formation wise and how it can work out. How worried are you from like a I guess I don't even want to
Chemistry's
say
a good way. No, that's a good
chemistry.
way of saying it because that's exactly what a lot of people would say is, oh, well, Mbappe has been portrayed as this narcissistic guy and
Right,
he made
like the
all.
Kyrie Irving shit, like we
Yeah,
talked about.
no, that's absolutely a valid
He's got to have
question.
the ball.
That's absolutely a valid question. I think a lot of that, though, maybe came from a bad rap from, again, the consistent PSG toxic kind of locker room. It was toxic before he got there. I'm sure he'd be toxic afterwards because they don't have a structure. They don't have a club structure. They don't have strong personalities in their club, and they don't have God. They're not an institution. They're a team of egos. They go around, and maybe they win a couple French leagues, but they probably will never do anything on the European kind of scheme of things because they're not a team. That's a glass half full approach. Is that when Mbappe shows up to a place with structure, with established veterans, with people who've been there, with people who like each other? Because that's a key part. Is you have to want to play with your teammates where it has always looked like Mbappe is not. If he intertwines with that, which I would assume he can, and maybe some of this kind of pessimism comes from the fact that people are like, yeah, well, it happened at PSG, it'll have to happen at Madrid. Well, he's already got friends at Madrid. He's got people his age, and like I said, he's got veterans that have been there who can set the precedent of how things are done, how you have to act, what your expectations are, how you train, how you play. That's a glass half full. The glass half empty approach is, you're right. He comes in, he's got this head on his shoulders of I'm Mr. Mbappe, and people have told me for the last 6 years that I'm the greatest thing since Messi and Ronaldo, and I'm more important than you, and this is my position, and you can go fuck off somewhere else, Vinny, and I'm gonna do this. There's a chance. I don't know. I'm not in those dressing rooms. I'm not in those kind of conversations. They all know each other. This isn't the 90s where if someone's playing in Italy and you're playing in Spain, you've never heard of this guy before and you'll see him for the first time and talk to him for the first time when he arrives for training. So they know each other. I would bet that they can figure it out. And I think it is kind of another step forward for Real Madrid team that, like I said, it's fucking scary for the rest of Europe.
Yeah, my last thing is you probably said it and I missed it. Where did the contract end up as far as the number? Is he the highest paid player in the world now?
Well, I mean, he was the highest paid player in the world before. He took a massive pay cut, but
Okay.
it's not necessarily that like that was never, because again, the money that he was getting paid at PSG, I don't think you can legally pay anywhere else. He was getting 72 million a year after French taxes, and that's before the loyalty bonuses kicked in. So like that was never going to happen.
Yeah.
But the one part where I mentioned where the terms were more favorable, if I remember correctly, the contract that we had proposed back in 2022 would have made him easily the highest paid player in our team, and some crazy image rights and this crazy this and crazy that. And again, we were just in a more vulnerable place at the time. We had been, it was kind of the post-Ronaldo era. We hadn't won a UCL in 4 or 5 years, or in 3 or 4 years, which for a lot of teams, that's
Normal.
normal. For us, that was a lot. We're no longer in that kind of depths. We have our players, and it became more of a, hey man, if you want to come be a part of the best team in the world, come be a part of it. If not, you don't need it. Now, obviously, I think if I remember correctly, he's getting paid the same amount as Vinny and Bellingham, who are kind of the two top earners at Real Madrid. So he's obviously at the top of the kind of the flag pool, but it's not head and shoulders above like he would have been. I think there is a signing on bonus we gave him, which is actually pretty hefty, but it's spread out over the contract. So I guess we'll see. I think I saw that his new salary for us will be like 15 million after taxes, which I think that's relatively kind of standard for top line soccer players. So we'll see.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, so I actually think that my impression of that is that's a good thing, and that he does actually want to be
Yes.
there, and that maybe you won't have to worry about some of maybe, I guess, the diva behavior you've mentioned in the past, is because he is, if he's willing to do this and take a hit, and sometimes these superstars just not being paid the highest on the team is a thing to them, even if it's no matter what that amount is in total. But that he's not even getting that anymore is at least promising, I think, from a worrying about him and how he's going to fit.
Yeah. I mean, obviously I'm a fan. I have to take the glass half full approach, but I don't see any issues with it. Again, these are I think there might, and this is not necessarily drama issues, but I could actually see Rodrigo turning into kind of the odd man out and potentially getting sold next summer, just because at some point, if you're a 23, 24-year-old player, you might want to be at Real Madrid, but you also need to play. Well,
Right.
we'll burn that bridge when we cross it. I would assume he can fit right into the team. Like I said, he's already got some Frenchmen there. He's got legends to kind of look up to. And if there's questions or if there's people that need to kind of sit there and maybe give him a slap upside the head and say, hey, dumb shit, I don't know how it was in Paris, but you don't get to do that here. There are people to do that. So it like I said, it's gonna be scary for the rest of Europe. Hopefully, a year from now, we're having the same conversation where we are the 16-time UCL champs and we're getting ready for another three-peat in 2025 or 2026 at that point.
Love it. That's
Yes.
all I got.
Yeah, I mean, this is actually a pretty long show considering when we started. Like I said, I mean, I got off on the soccer spiel, and I'm sure some people listening will kind of enjoy that if they make it this far. Others might not, but go us, I guess. So the last things I really have to say before I kind of turn it over to you is Real Madrid.
Viva Madrid. I don't know. I think that's right. Go team.